Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
Thanks for tuning in again, folks. My name is Rick Hill. I'm PCI's Discipleship and Leadership Development Officer, and I'm your host for today's episode. We're currently in a little series called Let's Talk. We're selecting an issue that cuts right across congregational life and taking time to explore it together. We've already talked about church revitalization and Bible engagement so far in this series, and you can check back to listen to those conversations. But today we want to talk about leadership. Many people have commented that it hasn't been an easy time to be a leader. The newness of the moment and the need to learn new skills, the pressures of decision making and the vast array of opinions, the constant change and continued uncertainty for the future, finding the balance between activity and reflection, and just the sheer exhaustion caused by the exertions of the past 18 months, and yet the need to give a lead and perhaps help to generate momentum. So what are we learning when it comes to leadership? For this conversation, I was joined by David Thompson, Catherine Viner, and Trevor Long to give us a breadth of perspectives. David exercises a different leadership role, heading up the team and day-to-day operations of the Department of PCI responsible for resourcing congregations. So he will offer a wider view of what he's seeing in terms of leadership at this time. Catherine brings a congregational lens of what she's experiencing and noticing about leadership at a more localised level. And then Trevor offers his insights from the perspective both of an elder and what leadership looks like within Kirk Session, but also from his role as Presbytery Clerk. So sit back and listen and enjoy this episode and this conversation about leadership in this moment. Folks, you're all really welcome to the podcast. David and Catherine, you've both contributed before, but Trevor, this is your first appearance, I think. So maybe we'll just take a moment for you to introduce yourself to the listeners, first of all.
Okay, I'm Trevor Long. I'm from North Belfast. I'm really a youth leader at heart, but I'm actually Clerk of Session in Rosemary Presbyterian. And for my sins, I'm also the Clerk of Presbytery up here in North Belfast.
Brilliant. We're all youth leaders at heart, I think. That's a brilliant way to introduce yourself. Catherine and David, you've been on before, but just maybe a quick reminder about your roles too.
Yeah, great to be with you again. I am the Minister of Malone in South Belfast.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. I head up the Department and Assembly Buildings that resources churches. So head up a staff team and the kind of day-to-day operations.
Brilliant. Well, today we want to talk about leadership. And David, maybe we'll start with you in terms of maybe just a bigger picture view. What do you see as the particular challenges for those who lead in this present moment?
I think this is probably the most complicated moment that those in formal leadership positions, ministers and Kirk Sessions and other leaders, will ever have experienced. And the black and white, here's what you can do and here's what you can't do phase of the pandemic, has really given way now to a time when there's greater responsibility to decide congregation by congregation and organisation by organisation. And hard enough as that is, there's still a lot of uncertainty in the air, isn't there? And often a lack of clarity about just basic things. And this great red herring of what's happening in other sectors like hospitality and schools, and you hear it on the news and you think, how does that map across into church life? And of course, sometimes it just doesn't. So leadership has more decisions to take than ever before. And I think every decision is tinged with a bit of disagreement because people are on a spectrum of comfort about the lifting of restrictions. And usually we have a handle on, you know, how people will react or what will happen if we do a certain thing. But these days we can't second guess that the way we usually do. So it's really difficult to plan ahead and prepare. So I think we're living with unprecedented levels of uncertainty and not knowing what's coming next. And that's really tough. It taxes our brains. It challenges us just to be motivated to keep going and to stay engaged with circumstances that are constantly changing. And when things slow down as well, you might think that's good, but sometimes you find that really tough as well. So I've come to think of this as the Kirk Dunk moment for leadership. It's not Connect Four, if you know what Connect Four is, where the aim is progressing in a straight line and you add the next counter to the one before and you know what getting four in a row looks like. It's much more like the game Kirk Dunk, where there's that whole set of marbles and they're randomly suspended on this set of straws. And you pull at one of those straws and you're not exactly sure what's going to happen. And maybe you start to pull at one and then it doesn't feel like a good idea anymore and you push it back in. And sometimes you're going to make a good choice, and other times you aren't, and there's going to be consequences because everything's just so finely balanced, and people and plans and priorities are all really fragile. So that's a really difficult thing to live with, never mind to lead through. Maybe it's impossible to know how things are going to turn out in the moment. And so leading is maybe about the exercise of wise judgment. And there's something very biblical about that, I think, in a book of Proverbs sort of a way, where you're just working things out moment by moment and day by day. It's very wearing, isn't it? It needs a lot of prayer. It needs the courage to say yes, but also the confidence to say no, or now's not the time. So everybody's leadership stressed. Really, really difficult moment.
Catherine, do you resonate with that and kind of what you're seeing and maybe experiencing within your leadership in Malone?
I wasn't thinking of the Kerplunk image, but the image that I've had in my mind over this past while is that of the false summit. You know, whenever you get up to the saddle, it's sleeve donnered, and you need to take that next stage, and you keep thinking you're just near the summit, and yet it's still a good 20, 30 minutes or more away. And it's been a wee bit like that over this past, particularly 12 months. We think we've made the adaptions, we've adjusted, and we're there, and then something else happens, and it's been a continual management of change. And that's been really demanding. And I think certainly as ministers in any form of leadership within the church, it's being aware of that, the impact of that upon ourselves. It can take its toll to constantly be in that state of change and having to make changes and adapt, and it can leave you fairly weary and weakened. So certainly I've been conscious of the impact of it upon me, and then that impacts how I lead and impacts then others, and just being then aware of how it then has affected others. I've certainly seen that it's undermined confidence in people in all ages in lots of different ways. And certainly as a leader, what I think one of the things that we are called to do is try and regain, help people regain that confidence. And that's a challenge because people are, there's fear, there's nervousness. I mean, even just the rush to the petrol stations that we're hearing about in the news, I think that's symptomatic of the fear that's in our culture at present. And so as leaders, it's about looking around and assessing the landscape, discerning where people are, how people are, and then trying to discern, well, at what stage are they at in reconnecting, and what stage are they at in re-emerging from this past 18 months. And then there's the demands, I suppose, in all of that, and in listening to God. And all that noise, background noise of fear and confusion and uncertainty, it's just listening to God and trying to discern the presence of His Holy Spirit in His church and also in the world. Those are the challenges that I see at present.
Yeah, I like that idea of sort of reading the room or understand the times, listening to God, and all of those things are really important to then know how we, or where we need to lead, or how we need to lead as well. Trevor, what are you seeing and sensing as well in this?
Well, I see fear in a lot of situations, or maybe a lack of risk taking. People want to be cautious. And when you're dealing with a group of people like a Kirk session, it's not easy to take risks. You're trying to get consensus in a lot of cases, and sometimes there isn't consensus, and sometimes you can end up doing nothing. Kirk sessions seem to like familiarity and routine, and we want to get back to routine and to the way that we were, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. So there is a lot of uncertainty and fear there, not a willingness to take risks. And I guess one of the things that really worries me a wee bit is that we haven't asked the important question about why are we doing all these things? What's really at the heart of what we do as a church? Why are we doing these things? I see in a lot of situations people wanting to get back to the routine of organizational life, but they haven't asked the question, well, what does God want us to actually do? What are we really here to do? What is our purpose? So I suppose I don't want people to be reckless. That's not what we're in the business of, but I do want us to be courageous, as David has said. And going back to his illustration of the Kerplunk, I think there's a lot of us have lost our marbles over the last couple of months, and I'm among them.
Very good. I like that. Trevor, let me pick up on some of the things you're talking about there in terms of caution, maybe not wanting to take risks, asking why. I think there's often a tension maybe in Christian leadership, and I've experienced it in Kirk Session in the past, you know, between this desire to give a strong lead, but also not wanting as an individual, let's say, to exert power or to be seen to dominate or, you know, to drive our own agenda, you know, which we don't want to do. So at this time, with where people are in different places, where there is maybe a caution, not wanting to take too many risks, but yet there's a need as well for leadership, maybe some are wanting to get going, some are slower to come back to things. Maybe what are the challenges of that? How can leaders manage that challenge well, between that?
Well, I think we can learn from one another. Because I'm Clark of Presbytery here in North Belfast, I can see what's happening, or I'm aware of what's happening in a whole host of organizations and different congregations. But it's like a whole flotilla of canoes all paddling furiously, and nobody actually recognizing that there's somebody just a few yards away that's paddling just as furiously. And so we're not learning from one another, and we're not encouraging one another, but we're busily paddling away as hard we can in our own way. I think we're not good. We're supposed to be Presbyterians, but really there seems to be a lot of congregationalism at heart, that we do our own thing in our own little corner, and we don't encourage somebody else, or we're not learning from somebody else up the road or down the road or around the corner. And I think we could do more of that. And I think in a positive way, in showing what's good, what's working. Maybe in some ways we're too busy just bailing our own canoe to make sure it doesn't sink. Be nice to be able to learn from somebody else, but if your own canoe's sinking, well, you got to keep bailing.
In South Belfast, in our presbytery, we have a WhatsApp group, and it has been invaluable the past 18 months to just put questions out there, share frustrations. So I hope we've been pretty Presbyterian, not too much congregationalist, but it's just been reassuring to know that we're all going through all the same kind of circumstances, and they've been affecting us all differently. But it's been great. People have been putting in advice of what they've tried, what's worked, what hasn't worked. And so I found that really helpful to have that conversation. At times it goes quiet, but there are other times where the WhatsApp group's pinging endlessly as we've got a new email from the clerk, the General Assembly, telling us more information. And then we're all trying to work out, how do we actually make this happen and do this on the ground? That collaborative leadership where we were coming together has been great.
Is that for you as ministers in South Belfast, Catherine?
Just active ministers, yeah.
You see, I think one of my worries is that that's not filtering down to elders. It's sticking there is a WhatsApp group in North Belfast for ministers, and people use that. But I think that the elders are still sitting with their blinkers on, thinking about their canoe rather than learning from others. You know, so maybe we need to extend that to other groups.
It is funny, isn't it, that one of the things we seem to be discovering, and it's symptomatic of what you're saying, is that sometimes in a congregation there are layers of leadership, and yet they're not really talking to each other. And I think we've seen that exacerbated by the fact that the flow of information from minister to Kirk Session to organization leaders, and those kind of spaces where we can have conversations about that, they aren't really there naturally in our church life. And so we're beginning to discover that that's a big deficit. To pick up on your question, Rick, the primary picture of Christian leadership in the Bible is really that of the shepherd, isn't it? And generally, shepherds don't act in a way that dominates or exerts power. They lead gently but firmly, and primarily relationally. I think if you talk to people who know about these things, and the three kind of Belfast people in this podcast, so we're probably not the best people to be talking about being shepherds, but I think if you talk to people who know about these things, they'll say, the shepherd is very relational with the sheep, and that's certainly the picture of Jesus and the good shepherd. And it seems to me that this is a moment where that particular metaphor that is primary in scripture has to come to the fore in the kind of ways that Catherine was talking about, that you've got to spend a lot of time with people just finding out how they are and where they are. And that's difficult, that's a real struggle for the kind of leaders who love to be out front rather than backstage. And you know, who become agitated because they've lost their audience on Sunday or through the week, or who only know how to drive and talk to you. That's really tricky. And it's really hard work, because the more people you talk to in a situation as difficult and complex as the one we're in at the minute, the more your emotional reservoirs are drained. And it certainly struck me, you know, that I go home sometimes at the end of the day and I've had an awful lot of conversations. And I think, why am I tired? Well, because I've just been working really, really hard to listen and really, really hard to hear and filter what I'm saying. And sometimes I've enough going on without listening to anybody else. And yet that's the job of the leader. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't have personal experience of shepherding, but my sister-in-law is a shepherdess, and I know for her the lambing season is a hectic time where she has to be hands-on and present, because there's so much of the lambing season. The sheep need her to support them in that moment that could ultimately turn into a moment of crisis. However, there's also something that's being birthed there that could be a moment of new life. And maybe there's something of that going on for us as leaders, as we're having to be more hands-on and present in this season. And as you say, David, listening well, empathizing, at times even grieving with our, you know, those in our congregation, and being present with them in the midst of what's happening. But that is hard whenever we're trying at the same time to observe restrictions and to just recognize that not everybody is at the place where they're willing to socialize as we once did a couple of years ago. So I feel that frustration at times, that my heart is a pastoral heart, but I can't always get into homes and meet people and be as present as I would have done a couple of years ago. So I'm relying on Zoom or phone calls at times, and that can only take you so far in terms of being with people. So certainly there's a sense of frustration that I feel, and talking to my colleagues, others are feeling that as well.
Yeah, we've seen that in North Belfast. The whole spectrum is there of people feeling angry and feeling guilty. And that's ministers, but it's also there present in elders as well, that they're not doing what they should be doing. But one story I have is of one elder who was ringing around his district, not in my congregation, but in another congregation. And he rang a couple of homes that he'd never been in. He'd never actually got across the door. And he ended up having two very, very helpful conversations with people that he'd never met, that had never been to church. So it's interesting, just by adding that layer in of phone calls, that he made contact. But to pick up on David's illustration with the shepherd, one question that bothers me is, what about the lost sheep? At the moment, I feel the situation is that we're certainly worried about the sheep that we have in our fold, but I'm not sure about what's happening with the ones outside the fence. And I challenge myself with that. You know, we're trying to get organizations back, but I think we've lost a wee bit of sight about what about the others who are out there, who don't really want to be in the fold.
Thanks, Trevor. It's a healthy challenge to bring to us today as well. I'd love to think about maybe some of the ways that you have been or are approaching your role as a leader, maybe practically and specifically. Catherine, I wonder, could you maybe just help us think about maybe how you talked about collaborative leadership a few moments ago. How are you seeking to do that? How are you creating times of reflection or taking decisions with others or communicating well? And what does that look like in Malone?
Well, outside my front door, there's a stone that was placed there by one of my elders. They placed it there after I preached a sermon on Exodus 17, where it talks about the elders giving Moses a stone to sit on during the battle with the Amalekites. And so this elder arrived with this stone to always remind me that the burden is shared, and that as elders, they want to be there to share that burden with me, and it's not all upon me. And so collaborative leadership is certainly something that I've tried to not only encourage, but to create. And going forward, I think that's something that it would be important for us all to foster, so that there is that sharing of the burden as we're, you know, re-emerging out of these restrictions and reconnecting as congregations. That's certainly something that I'm reminded of every day I walk through the door. But as I've approached my role as a leader recently, I've certainly, as I've mentioned earlier, become aware of how this past 18 months has impacted me personally. And it's important that I'm aware of that, and as leaders we are. So, you know, I've been timetabling in retreats. I would meet regularly with a spiritual director. I'm aware of my own strengths and weaknesses, and some of them have come to the fore, both strengths and weaknesses, over this past 18 months, and even how they're perceived by others. So I'm just conscious of where I'm at and how this has impacted my relationship with God and on my role within the church, and then trying to be aware of how it's affected others. But I've also tried to, approaching the role as leaders, tried to, as Trevor's mentioned earlier, I've tried to bring questions to our Kirk session rather than answers, and posed questions and raised what I consider to be some key questions right now, and then encouraged the elders to share their response to those questions and listen to one another, and not rush to conclusions or rush to make decisions, but certain learning that art of patience as a leader, and patience in this season. There is a tendency within us, whenever we're under pressure or in a state of crisis, for a knee-jerk reaction. And that's only normal, but it's not always the best thing. And so it's trying to adjust the gears and get people to slow down. And yet, whenever I came into Malone 7 years ago, I was trying to get them to speed up. I was going 100 miles per hour. My elders sat with their mouths wide open, as in one Kirk session meeting, I told them that we need to slow down. They couldn't believe what they were hearing from me. It's being aware of the season that we're in, and we are in a season where we need to slow down. One of the ways we've done that in Malone is we've created a monthly evening called Wednesday Worship, which is just a time of prayer and worshipping God and listening to God and being in God's presence and being restored and renewed. And I certainly felt there were many in my congregation who just needed that time, albeit just an hour in the month, to come and be present. And I try to create space for them to have a conversation with God and to listen, to lean in and listen to God.
That's really helpful. Trevor, what about you for some of these ways that you've been approaching?
Well, it's been interesting. People like to be busy doing something, and one of the frustrations was that we weren't doing anything. And so there was a focus in our congregation on getting some work done, you know, physical work, painting, different things. So there was sort of this, well, let's get some work done to the buildings and painted and railings done and all the rest of it. And I think that was good that these things got done, but it put the focus on the buildings, not on why are we here and what are we really trying to achieve. And we became very, unbalanced about why we were there. So I suppose at the moment, my job and our minister's job is to try and get our Kirk session back to the asking the question why. And that's not easy, because people just want to be on doing something, and choosing the color and who's going to do it and how much it's going to cost are things that people can get their heads around. But when you're actually asking the question, why are we doing these things, or should we be doing those things, that's a much more difficult question. So we're having some awkward conversations about that, and trying to get back to the idea of focusing on people and also on developing leaders. But maybe we'll come to that before we finish. You need to realize you have to develop leaders. They don't just arrive there. We have to develop them. Use them or lose them is another phrase that I've heard recently, and I think it's true. If we don't develop our young people to become leaders and do it intentionally, they're going to drift away. They may not stay anyhow, but we've got to put time and effort into developing leaders.
I think one of the tensions we're probably putting our finger on here at the moment is there is a need to build momentum. So if we don't get going again when we can get going, we're going to miss a moment here that's really important. And yet if you want to ask the why question simultaneously, you need to slow down. And I think that's just really, really difficult at the minute. And both those things are probably going on in different parts of our leadership brain. And that just makes life really tough for everyone. I think maybe the antidote to that is to set a pace that's steady, so it's not too slow and it's not too fast. And that maybe gives us the opportunity to multitask and think about the why, but also begin to build a bit of momentum. I do think there's a lot in giving yourself time as a leader to just take time. And part of that's just to make sure you're listening well, to make sure you're filtering well, to make sure you're giving weight to what you're hearing. Because let's face it, if you're a leader at the minute, everybody's in your ear. And you turn on the news and that's in your ear. And the latest email comes from the clerk and that's in your eye, if not in your ear, but it's something that goes in your head as well. So we need to take time. I do think what's coming out at the moment in my world are decisions that are a combination of a whole lot of necessary compromises. So you're thinking to yourself, well, we'd like to do this, but of course we also need to tailor it because of that. And so there's all these compromise decisions that you're making now. Instinctively, I think that's not a bad thing at the moment. They feel like the right kind of decisions for now because the changing situation is so rapid. And we are trying to properly discern in a moment that might be like this today, but it's like something else next week.
I think it's given people time as well to go through their experiences. I certainly had one moment in the past 18 months where somebody projected their anger and frustration and disappointment towards me. And yet a couple of months ago, they met me in the car park outside our church building during the week and came up to me with the tears in their eyes and said, I owe you an apology. I never thought I was going to get that apology. And I had asked myself a lot of questions about the extent to which I deserved or needed to hear the rant and the views and the expressions of frustration and fear. But they recognised and it was just about giving them time. But that's hard. And not everybody will come back and say, I shouldn't have poured it out or directed it upon you. And yet there is something about being a leader that there are times where you are the forefront and you're going to take the punches and going to take the hits.
So from these sort of specific examples we've been talking about, maybe some of you have been sharing, what do you see as the more general, maybe leadership principles or routines that you can tease out for those who are listening? So I've heard things like creating times and space to actually ask the why questions. We've heard things about really trying to work together as much as we can, support one another, not do things independently as leaders. What else is in there that you want to just draw out or really highlight in terms of an overarching principle?
Can I just throw in the number question? That it isn't always about numbers. One night I was trying to have a sort of a youth fellowship gathering and only two people turned up. And part of me was really disappointed. Within 10 minutes, I realized it was the best night we'd had in years because of the conversation I had with those two people. So maybe just to realize that sometimes it's not about having 20 people in the room, but having a conversation with one or two can be as productive and as meaningful.
Yeah, I think this is certainly for leaders a time to show integrity and honesty. And, you know, Jesus at times expressed his tiredness and frustration, took himself off up a mountain or out onto a boat in the lake. And I think as leaders, we're not above that. And we too get tired and we get frustrated and we hurt. And sometimes we're without answers. And there are times whenever we even make mistakes and we need to apologize. And there are times we need to just tell people that we're waiting. We're waiting to hear from God because, you know, God doesn't always immediately respond to us. We don't have a direct, you know, special line. We're waiting like everybody else. And it's to share that and just to have that integrity and honesty of where we're at as leaders. And then I think that's when people can meet us best, whenever, you know, we do share openly like that. But I know it's not easy and you show a degree of vulnerability, but there are many vulnerable people in our congregations in lots of different ways. And I think maybe now is the time as leaders to show a degree of vulnerability.
Yeah, I find this a really difficult question to answer because I wouldn't want anybody thinking, listen to this podcast, that I know what I'm doing.
I'm glad, David, you feel that too. Whenever I was invited to be on this, I thought, wow, this is a bit ambitious.
So, you know, it's okay to be making some of it up as you go along. It's probably okay to be going into a meeting not quite knowing sometimes what you want to say, or coming out of it not quite able to process what's happened, or a conversation, not just a meeting.
The last theme I'd love to explore is this idea, which is probably explicit in leadership or maybe implicit in leadership, is this idea of developing others, developing other leaders, and bringing people with us. Trevor, you hinted at that earlier on. So I suppose as some congregations are perhaps finding gaps appearing in leadership teams as some leaders step down or have been slow to come back, how do you think we might manage that? And particularly, how can we encourage people to serve and mobilize others to step into leadership roles? So Trevor, you were touching on that leadership development piece. Do you want to come in on that first?
Yeah, I have plenty of experience of the problem, but not very many of the answers. But I do see some churches that have been more constructive in giving leadership to younger people and spreading the load. But it's not just a passing of the buck. It's actually this: if you want to take, we would like you to take this on, but we will be with you. We will help you. We will get you training. We will support you. We will mentor you through this. And those that are doing well at that are doing very well. But in a lot of cases, there's too many people of my age and older that are still doing the same thing that we're doing 40 years ago. And we haven't brought the leaders on that we should have. So I think we need to be more intentional. And it's not just saying, right, you're in charge of Sunday school, you're in charge of youth club, get on with it. I think it's about saying, we'd like you to take this on and we will find you ways of getting the nurture, the training that you need to be able to do that. So I think we need to be more intentional.
David, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think the reality is for a lot of congregations, they don't have younger leaders to bring on. And so if they are going to fill leadership holes that are beginning to emerge, they're going to have to look around at the people who maybe they wouldn't have naturally looked at as the next phase of leaders, but because they've got more time or because they can think differently about leadership, they're the people who are going to step in to fill the gaps. I do wonder whether part of this going forward might be that we have to rethink the leadership ask, if I can put it like that. I do think a lot of people are reassessing their lives over the last 18 months. And sometimes it's easy to be really lazy about that and say, I quite like the lockdown and wasn't running about every night. Now, that's what I really want to stick with. And maybe that's lazy. But there's a good reassessment as well that goes on where people realize I have a spiritual life to lead here. And it's about a whole lot of different callings. And maybe I do need to step back from some things. But if we're going to think about leadership going forward, we might have to think that we don't run everything every week. We do only run things 3 times a year or for a season. That could be a really big challenge for us because we're used to running 120 miles an hour with a packed program that fits a medium-sized church when we really become a small church. And I think we're going to have some huge questions to ask about leadership. And when I'm saying this sort of thing, you can hear it and think, oh dear, I don't like the sound of that. That sounds like we're going backwards. That could actually be a step forwards.
Catherine, I saw you nodding your head there. Do you want to?
Yeah, I have always advocated for shared and collaborative leadership. I think there's a real a biblical premise for that. When it talks in the Bible about elders and overseers, it's always in the plural. And you see models of leadership of Moses and Jethro and Elijah and Elisha and Paul and Lydia. So there's that plurality of leadership and even Jesus and his disciples. And certainly going forward, I've tried in Malone to encourage more than one person to take on the responsibilities. So it's shared. And take, for example, in committees. So rather than one person take on the responsibility, there's two. And therefore, only one of them needs to be at the committee meeting. And so there's less of attending meetings. And when decisions are made, it's shared. And they have a team of people to support them. So it's not just relying upon the shoulders of one person or even two. I've also tried to, as David has mentioned, create timeframes to ensure if people are considering volunteering or I'm seeking volunteers that I'm clear about what's expected, the expectations in time, the expectations in role, this isn't something that they need to do indefinitely and, you know, into eternity, but it's only for a certain time. And that seems to encourage people. Trevor maybe alluded to perhaps a need for a change in attitude. I wonder if there's a wee bit of ageism in PCI, where when we're looking for volunteers, we look down instead of looking up. When I read the Bible, I certainly see quite a few people who are of a certain age and a certain vintage who are still serving the Lord with enthusiasm and activity. And I think there are many active older people in our congregation who could step back into or step into serving in a way that they haven't done before. So maybe in those congregations where there's not the young people there, we need to just open up the opportunities to everybody and anybody who is willing and able to serve the Lord and not necessarily look to one particular group. I think the other thing that we need to do is we need to communicate a sense of urgency or need and not be ashamed of that and not be embarrassed. And even to say, look, we can't run this or do this. This ministry cannot work unless we have people. And therefore, it's not going to happen until we have however many people you need for it to run. I mean, we're having a situation at the minute within regards to our youth club. And if we don't get the leaders, we cannot run it. And yet people are saying, we need a youth club. The youth club needs to be back up and running. That's great. But who's going to put their hands up and step forward and do one Saturday night or three Saturday nights between now and Christmas? So everybody has, you know, can back a good idea, but it's actually saying, asking yourself, going back to as Trevor says, good questions, asking yourself, how can I participate in this and support it in a practical way?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks to you all. I mean, some really rich reflections there around how we're leading both practically and also bigger picture as well. I just wanted to finish by asking each of you to share something from the Bible that has been particularly helpful for you recently, perhaps in your own leadership journey or life as well. So we'll go Trevor, Catherine, and then give David the last word.
Mine is from Hebrews chapter 12, and it's that passage. It's just after we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And I'm aware of the fact that this weekend is the marathon weekend in London and Belfast. And it says in the passage that we're to run the race with perseverance. And I guess that one of the things that I've been asking God for is to help me to persevere, to keep going. This isn't a sprint, it's a marathon, or maybe it's an obstacle course that we're actually going through at the present time. And then the last thing is that it doesn't stop there. It doesn't just say it's a race run with perseverance. It actually says, keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. And I need to remind myself that I need to keep my eyes fixed on him and keep going, but following him.
Yeah, I'm just going to share a few verses from Psalm 42 that I've shared a couple of times with my congregation over the past 18 months. It says, as the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When can I go and meet with God? My tears have been my food day and night, while people say to me all day long, where is your God? These things I remember as I pour out my soul, how I used to go to the house of God under the protection of the Mighty One, with shouts of joy and praise among the great festive throng. And then it goes on to say, my soul is downcast within me, therefore I will remember you, God. And it says, deep calls to deep, in the roar of your waterfalls, all your waves and breakers have swept over me. I love this picture that David paints in Psalm 42 of how it talks about how we long for streams and God gives us waterfalls and waves and breakers. I mean, that's the God we worship. That's the God we are following. That's the God who's called us to lead in this moment. We're doing a series at the minute based on Ephesians called More Than, and it comes from that little verse in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, that says, God is immeasurably more than you can think of or imagine. And we need to hold to that understanding of who our almighty great God is. As Trevor was saying, keeping your eyes on Jesus, it's the God of the resurrection. So yes, things appear to be dead at present, or dying, but we worship the God of the resurrection. And so we'll wait to see. I am excited to see what God is going to do once we come out of this season and enter into the next.
I think the crux of the struggle for a lot of us at the moment is the discomfort of living in an in-between time. You know, the way we kind of feel, we're not where we were earlier in the pandemic, but we certainly aren't out of this thing yet. And a couple of the wee verses that have spoken to me about that are in 1 John 3 and 2, where John writes, "Dear friends, now we are children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. All who have this hope in him purify themselves just as he is pure." And it's that wee bit, what we will be has not yet been made known, has not yet been made known. And I read that and I hear myself saying to God, "I know, God, but could you just move this on a wee bit quicker so that we see how this slow burner of a pandemic ends and how this all pans out?" And then I kind of think I hear God saying to me, "You know what, David, you just leave the time and wrap to me. And the most important thing you need to hear at the minute is that you're a child of God. And that's far more important than any leadership role or responsibility that you have. And I'd love you, David, to become more Christ-like through this experience, because, you know, that's kind of the work that I'm in the business of." And if we really do have this hope in the meantime, what does it mean to purify ourselves? Well, it's got to mean we try to work on those things that detract from how we serve God as leaders, isn't it? And that's things like impatience and me having to feel that I'm in control, or that I have to be popular with everybody, or I just have to feel I'm the right answer for everybody. I actually need to purify myself of all that and just put my hope in Jesus, knowing that I'll be like him when the time comes and I see him as he is. So what we will be has not yet been made. Yeah, I think that's true for us all.
Yeah, and it's a great way to finish, because I think as we've been talking today, we have been talking about, you know, maybe principles or things that we want to put into action, practical things as well, but actually it brings us back to the heart of Christian leadership, which is about our identity as leaders, as followers of Jesus first, and then our character as well. We've plenty of bad examples of lack of character in leaders right now. And actually, if we can get some of those building blocks right, then actually no matter what the decisions that we take or the way we go about things, actually will be the thing that really matters, and the people as well. So thanks to each of you for what you've contributed today. Some really rich reflections. And yeah, I appreciate you coming on and giving up your time today.
So thanks to each of our contributors for what they shared on today's episode. And you might want to pass this on to those who take a lead in your congregation, or perhaps fellow leaders who might benefit from listening to it as well. And let's do keep reflecting on how we can both give a lead within our congregations as well as work with others as we do. And just before we finish, just to flag up a couple of opportunities and resources that might be helpful for leaders at this time. Firstly, we're excited to be hosting some events for leaders, both in person and online, next month under the Fanning the Flame banner. So keep an eye on the PCI website for more info about those gatherings. And then resources wise, if you go to presbyterianireland.org/refined and click on the Fanning the Flame tab, you will find some resources that help leaders reflect on approaching the journey out of lockdown. There's a resource there called Opening Up to God that's designed to be used in the context of a Kirk session meeting or leadership team conversation. And basically it's a short one-off session that combines some questions and a visual picture to help leaders discern their next steps together. But that's all for now. In our next episode, the conversation will turn towards children's ministry, and that will be hosted by Ruth Bromley. So until next time, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.